Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Join me as I seek out the small incremental changes being applied in other industries that we can learn from and that can be applied in healthcare. Can these changes bring immediate value, but also add up to the big improvements and revolution we need in healthcare? Come along with me to explore the possibilities. My innovative guests from around the globe have used small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. And today, I'm delighted to be joined by my good friend, Fred Goldstein. He is the president of Accountable Health and also a fellow Healthcare Radio Now podcaster with the Accountable Health Population Health Week podcast. Fred, thanks for joining me today.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here, Nick. Looking forward to it.
So this is going to be a new regular feature where we talk about news you can use on health technology, systems, and security, where with my guests, we pick up some of the latest items in the news, talk about some of the things that are impacting our world of healthcare, and just some general informative areas that I think you'll find interesting with some great opinions from different people, including myself. So to kick off, I wanted to start talking about out-of-network billing as our first topic. Seems to be a hot topic, and let me just preface this with a brief personal story. Preserving the innocence and an anonymity of the individuals, a 20-something that I'm familiar with had the misfortune of fracturing their ankle. So not something that's unusual. I personally have done it, but they had to have surgery. So they had to have metal put in. Don't know precisely what, but maybe some kind of a pin and plate. And then some period later, several weeks later, that all got infected with staph, and they were required to go back in and needed to be treated with IV antibiotics. And they had central line antibiotics. So that's not the venous ones that go in your arm. That's a line that goes into your chest, often called a PICC line. And they had to have the hardware removed. And this is essentially a complication. I would say you could call it an anticipated complication, but it was not something you would expect. I certainly don't go in and have surgery and expect to get an infection. And then ultimately, several weeks later, when they're finished and, you know, they have a result that, quite frankly, must be suboptimal with those kind of complications, a bill shows up for $130,000 for this 20-something. And I'm here looking at that, just devastated for this individual. Some of this was about out-of-network billing. Some of this was about their insurance mechanism. Some of this was about the coverage and the percentage that they got. Fred, I know you've sort of lived and breathed this stuff and the challenges. How do we fix problems like this?
Well, it's a fascinating case you bring up, and obviously very sorry to hear it. It has a couple of key points. One is the issue of out-of-network providers that you raised. The other is the issue of having a complication that then increased the bill, which when you think about that from almost any other industry you go into, if a mistake like that occurs when you buy a vehicle or something like that, or get it repaired, it's covered. It's part of a guarantee. Now, there are some places outside the United States, for example, Health City Cayman Island, they offer guarantees on their work and you come back in, and you're starting to see that in the US, but clearly something that needs to be considered in this case. The second one, obviously, is this out-of-network issue. How do you solve that? The first thing, and it's interesting, Nick, as I may have mentioned to you earlier, this past week I was in my local congressman's office, and I was discussing healthcare with him and the bill we have up on the Hill for Medicaid. And afterwards, he asked me, can I ask you a question? I have another issue I'm looking at. I said, absolutely. And he said, what do we need to do about out-of-network bills, these surprise bills that people get? And great guy, just in Congress for a couple of years so far, but really, really doing some interesting work. And I said, that's a great question. To solve that's going to require a couple of things. But one for sure is, it should be something known in advance. And because of that, they should tell you this physician is not in network. And you should have the authority to say, excuse me, but you need to identify somebody as part of that team who is in network and bring them in. Now, I think a lot of this happens, obviously, in EDs and ORs in the United States, but it's reached the level of concern that it's actually now being looked at in Congress and elsewhere and needs to be solved. It's just completely inappropriate to get these surprise bills. It'd be like going in to get your car fixed for one thing, and suddenly you get $1,000 to tag on because they had somebody else look at something else or do part of the work that you didn't know about.
Or actually, they damage the car when they put it on the lift and something happens. I mean, it feels really wrong. And to my point of this anticipated versus unanticipated, if you're going to classify it as an anticipated potential problem, you know, to your point of this known in, then it's known in advance and you know the percentage, and as a percentage, maybe that gets incorporated into this, you know, single price that is shared ahead of time that says, no matter the outcome, we're going to charge you this price, even if you have complications. That seems like a reasonable sort of approach. Doesn't Geisinger do something like that? Hadn't I heard that they were doing that?
I do believe there are some places like Geisinger that are guaranteeing or saying, if you have an issue, come back and we fix that at no extra charge.
Right.
We're going to get there at some point. It should be moving faster than it is. It's certainly an issue. This out-of-network billing stuff is a major problem. And what bothers me about most of that is it may occur in a surgery or something like that. The anesthesiologist may be out-of-network or maybe an assisting surgeon. Why did they bring them in on the team? Bring in the in-network person. So that sort of bothers me.
Yeah, and I think that brings up that whole issue of transparency. And there's been some, you know, efforts, certainly from the administrative folks and the political individuals have really tried to sort of push this out. They forced this whole, you must publish the rack rate pricing. And my goodness, did we see this pushback from, nobody could understand it. This is impossible. That's just going to complicate the issue. And whilst I understand that, doesn't that suggest that, you know, maybe you should be better at communicating this? And if you don't know all of the details, this ought to be something that you include as part of the package and have transparent pricing, no?
It's absolutely correct. And it's interesting to watch the groups going at this. For example, the Florida Healthcare Coalition was just on another podcast around what the work they do. And they've got this Bill of Rights for employers. And part of it is the right to see the data, the right to know what they're paying for the healthcare services they're buying for their employees. So we're getting there. The industry's obviously slow to respond. And part of that is because I just saw some data where in some communities, for example, with an MRI, you may have five times, the variation may be 500% between the price of an MRI at different facilities.
Easily. So, you know, in fairness to the industry, so I think it would be wrong to sort of sit here. It's easy to, you know, as a consumer of this and whatever, I one of the legitimate pushbacks here is, you know, this is competitive information. This is part of the contracting. How do we reconcile this with, you know, transparent pricing? Or is this just these are, you know, two opposing views and you can't reconcile it? I mean, what do you think?
So I can go and I can look at a refrigerator at Best Buy or Amazon or Sears or any of those and know what I'm going to pay for the refrigerator. And yes, it's competitive information. There is some pushback and talk being discussed that if we know somebody else is getting more money, we'll just raise our rates to theirs. And that's one of the ideas that the industry is pushing to keep from having us push these transparent prices.
Come on, let's be honest. That's not really going to happen, is it? Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness. I see they're charging so much more. We've got an opportunity to go higher.
Well, it's funny you should say that because I was, as I said, I was talking to somebody else negotiating with these various hospitals, and one of them found out that the other one down the road 15 minutes away was getting higher reimbursement and had lower quality scores and came back and said, we're going to raise our rates.
Oh, so it is going to happen. So there is some downside, right?
Yeah, there's some downside. And obviously in healthcare, the way the system is today, everyone's got to maximize their stuff, and they do.
But I mean, not at the price of crippling somebody. I mean, can you imagine that? 20-something, you've got just an ordinary salary. How could you possibly afford to pay that?
If I were them, I would walk back into that facility, you know, go back in and say, I'll pay you your Medicare rate. And
that's a great strategy.
A huge discount off of that.
That's a great strategy. I'm actually going to suggest it to them because I really do feel bad for them. Worth mentioning, you know, one of the things that came up as part of this was the out-of-network billing report that was in JAMA. And what was interesting about it was that that was a 2016 data set. So it's old. And even in that, they were talking about the percentage of people that got these surprise bills. And they were all in the 40s. The largest one, and again, this is, you know, people have heard me say this, so this won't be news. I have told categorically, under no circumstances are you to call an ambulance for me. I will take an Uber. I'll do anything rather than, because 86% of those ambulance rides proved to be a surprise bill. And the average was $2,000. That's wow. A lot of money.
That is. That's unbelievable. And I think that article you mentioned had a couple different areas they talked about. And ambulance, I've actually seen written up now a few times about people getting these surprise bills from ambulances just because that one happened to not, that showed up at their house happened to not be in network. And that's just wrong. There needs to be a way for them to bring that back to a reasonable rate between the health plan and the out-of-network provider. There are states looking at regs that are saying you can't charge more than X. Maybe it's usual and customary or something like that if you're out-of-network. And clearly we need something like that because it's just not right or fair to the end consumer and those paying these bills.
So anyway, I think, you know, intriguing area. I think there's absolutely opportunity for improvement. There's no question. I understand the challenges for some of these folks. But I think the reality is we are owed a duty of care, and that duty of care includes an understanding ahead of time what this is going to cost us and, you know, the impact. And by the way, if we're unconscious and you treat us and suddenly we get all of this going on, you know, that's a different circumstance and a different set of rules, quite frankly, because if I'm unconscious, I couldn't make any decisions. You were making them for me and I might have made a different one.
Correct.
So moving on, let's talk about some of the technology. I've seen some interesting things. You know, want to get your thoughts on this. The most intriguing to me, so I'm very into this passive acquisition of data and, you know, so following on from this transparency point, blood pressure is probably one of the most meaningful measures that we have the least amount of data. I mean, how often do you measure your blood pressure? Even if you have one of these devices in the home, and if you don't, it's, you know, once a year when you get your physical, maybe. And, you know, you probably have a higher reading as a result of that. We're seeing this new concept, and I saw it a few years ago with some visual, and essentially it does some subtraction technology of the different bands of light, so red, green, and understands or uses some algorithms that says, I can detect your blood pressure through a camera. This new app called Anura is using more than that and was actually offering some insights. And you basically took a selfie and were able to measure your blood pressure. Now, I'm excited about that. It's still too much work. It's not the same as sort of stepping on your weighing scales and sending everything to the cloud, which I do now routinely on a daily basis. But it's certainly a lot easier and people can do it. Would you do that? What are you doing for your blood pressure?
Other than ignoring it? No.
Ignore that, folks. That's not the right answer.
No, that is not. The doctor is now going to hammer me for being a non-adherent or compliant patient, depending on your concern, how you look at it. My blood pressure has been pretty good. I do have a blood pressure cuff here. I don't use it much. I tend to, you know, use my fitness devices to manage, to look at what my heart rate is and things like that. But so far, each time I've been to the doctor, I'm in decent shape. Hopefully it stays that way. I did for a while have a blood pressure cuff, but I didn't use it a lot, as I said. I think something like this is obviously better. The less intrusive, the less time consuming, that's what we need. I have seen some others that, for example, you walk by a wall and the wall's able to measure things like pulse and things like that. So we're getting there. It'll be interesting to see, and I didn't see all of the data on this, how close it is to getting, is this approved now in various countries?
No. So this is early work. It's research work actually coming out of Canada, and I'm trying to score an interview with the senior researcher there. We'll see if he did reply. So maybe he'll be appearing on the show and I'll love to talk about the detail, but it's still early. And, you know, one of the immediate pushbacks I hear from my colleagues is it's not accurate. You know, it's a 10 plus or minus 10, 15, you know, whatever the percentile difference is. So is that impactful? And, you know, I understand that it needs to have some level of accuracy and you can't have these wide swings that are just not attributable to actual changes. But just the fact that you're measuring on a regular basis and actually taking account of that, to me, is extraordinarily important. And, you know, you're telling me that you think your blood pressure is great, but how do you really know unless you've measured it recently and you use those devices?
True, true. I would just say the issue around how much variability is in that measurement concerns me, depending on how you're using it, obviously.
Right.
If it's for a clinical measure, you've seen all this with the Apple Watch and the cardiologist saying, wait a second, it's not accurate enough. I would say it'll be interesting to see what they have to say. And it looks like they're going to be testing it in China later this year. And so hopefully they get enough data to begin to validate that. The other question is, let's say it's maybe 10 to 15% is not too bad, but let's say somebody sees it and it's off and it overstates their results by 15%. Do you create undue stress in that individual?
Gosh, so doesn't this sound like something that's already happening with a certain watch and an EKG?
could be. So, but those are the kinds of things you have to think about. You put this out in the general community who doesn't have your level of expertise or in other physicians and says, wait a second. Oh my gosh, look at my results. I don't understand them, but they're really stressing me out.
Yeah, great point. I absolutely. And I know I'm always on the bleeding edge. So, you know,
I love to be there too. And then I take a step back. Yep. just one.
Absolutely. So for those of you just joining, I'm featuring Fred Goldstein. He's the president of Accountable Health and also a fellow podcaster on Healthcare Radio Now. And this is our new regular feature, News You Can Use on Health Technology Systems and Security. We were just talking about the passive measurement of blood pressure in this particular instance. And you know, to talk a little bit more about other things going on, have you seen the new series that's been promoted heavily? I think it's on TBS, Chasing the Cure.
Yes, I have seen the ads on the TV. Definitely. They're out there. They're pushing it hard.
And what do you think?
Well, I think it's a good way to get people to watch TV. I'm not so sure how good it is yet. I'm waiting to see. I did hit the website and looked at a couple of the cases they're exploring. I'm not sure what they did, what they found, what the value was. I think that's going to be the key point. So I guess it's still up in the air, but it's a little disconcerting to see something like that.
And you know, I understand the underlying principle. So, you know, it's groupthink or, you know, the value of multiple perspectives that come to bear on something to say, hey, can we solve this? Which is what we do in medicine. What troubles me is creating a TV show and dramatizing this. This is, you know, it's like the Survivor on the island, or you know it's this over dramatization of something that is so incredibly serious, and it trivializes it for me. And to your point of this false positives and, you know, potentially false hope, I'm just really disconcerted by the idea that this becomes a TV program. And whilst I respect the clinical professionals that are trying to do good things, is this really the best way to use those resources to put it on TV and make people these sort of 15 minutes of fame at the price of sort of exploring their personal lives and these challenges that they have? I don't know. It's a real struggle for me to even go and watch it. I've got to be frank.
Yeah, there are a couple of issues I would think of. Number one, I'd love to see which cases they don't take. And then the question becomes, as a viewer, are viewers going to suddenly say, I've diagnosed myself, look at that? Or are they going to be smart and say, I have an issue that's not being addressed very well. Let me go find a group of experts to look at that, like going to a center of excellence for treatment or something like that. And maybe it drives that. But the idea of all the drama, at least from what I saw in the videos, is a little over the top.
Yeah, if it bleeds, it leads, is, you know, that's for the news, not for medical treatment of patients. It's just
right.
It's awful.
The question becomes, Nick, it would be interesting to see which healthcare companies sponsor ads on that show.
Yeah, that would require me to do two things that don't do. One is watch the show, and two, watch adverts. I've got TiVo for that. So
there you go.
That's not going to happen. Well, somebody will tell us, hopefully. Okay, so a few other things to potentially talk about. And, you know, just this past week or so was DEF CON. That's the big security conference that takes place in Vegas at the same time as Black Hat. Black Hat's the formal one. DEF CON's the hackers. I thought it was really interesting that one of our sort of folks who are a part of the community, Andrea Downing, or Brave Bosom, as she is on Twitter, presented at the Digital Health Hacking Pavilion, which, by the way, I think is in its third or fourth year, and I've watched it grow. I've been the last couple of years. I didn't manage to make it this year. Apparently, it was even bigger, sponsored by large corporations. And essentially, the intent here is to put the devices up and allow people to hack them. They have the same thing with the voting machines. I was there for that for the first year. By the way, they hacked them all within the first 24 hours. It was a trivial exercise. Not the medical machines. This was the voting machines, but actually for the medical machines, same kind of thing. So anything that you hear about in terms of security, quite often there's some truth to that, but you know, a lot of focus, which is good news. And in this particular instance, it was about the use of data that was in private groups. This is what she was presenting on in Facebook that people had set up that were private to talk about specific conditions to share information. And then suddenly they discover that this data is being used and shared without their consent. Seems like a big sort of overreach in my mind.
Yeah, and this was this in the case of Facebook actually using that data because they have access to it?
And reselling it, I believe.
Yeah, and it's interesting because there was another situation that occurred very much like this where a hospital system set up a dermatology program to exchange data between rural providers and a dermatologist using Facebook and sending the photos across. And then they suddenly realized they have access to all of this information. I think it gets back to like Google in Canada at one point was figuring stuff out and then selling it, and companies were sending ads related to the disease or your maternity or something like that. And Clearly it points to the fact that one, we need to first understand what the heck they're doing. And then two, be able to make rational decisions. And in some cases, maybe just turn those platforms off.
And I'd give credit to the person that said this, but I don't know who it is. Maybe you know, but if the price of what you're using is zero, then you are the product. And that's the case with these. And I don't know if you've seen The Great Hack, which is the Netflix expose on some of this behavior. I think this problem is only going to get worse. And when it comes to medical data, even bigger issue, right?
Absolutely. We have to really be concerned about these various sites that are that have medical data in them. Even if we think they're a private group, somebody's doing it.
Okay, so a couple of minutes left, maybe just worth talking about another study that I saw, this first year analysis of the operating room black box study. So they put in this black box in the operating room. What a brilliant concept. This is just published. I'll put the links into this, but using the airline methodology of saying, hey, let's track these things. And gosh, I hope so, but you know, a no blame fault analysis to see what's going wrong, so that that's the way that we get to Six Sigma in terms of error prevention, right?
Absolutely. And the idea of taking this thing that measures and brings in information automatically that can be then used to determine what's going on in the operating room was fantastic. I thought that was a great idea as well.
Yeah, and what I saw in that was the number of cognitive distractions, although it made me laugh a little bit because they were talking about music in the OR and stuff. And I know with certainty that I worked with surgeons who said, I want music. And by the way, whoever the senior surgeon was, it was their playlist that got played.
Right.
So tough luck if you didn't like country and Western, and that's what he liked.
Right. No, I think that's a great area to look at. And using technology to do that, hopefully it does improve quality. It sounds like it's got a lot of potential.
I love that idea. Anyway, as usual, we've run out of time. Hopefully, interesting set of items to talk about. We'll put in some links with the associated blog post so that you can see the articles. Just remains for me to thank Fred Goldstein, fellow podcaster and friend, for joining me today.
My pleasure, Nick.
Thanks for joining me today. Do you have any better ideas, or have you found a small incremental change that's brought about a big improvement in your world? Let's continue the conversation on our hashtag, The Incrementalist, or share with me at DrNick1 on Twitter. You can find more information about the show on our program page at healthcarenowradio.com. And tune in next time to hear my discussions with leaders and innovators from around the globe who've revolutionized their space by using small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and I'm starting a revolution through evolution.